Governor Branstad says he wants to toughen penalties for repeat offenders in cases of domestic violence. This hour, how Iowa's lawmakers are approaching it. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowan Tiffany Allison is a domestic abuse survivor. She says harsher penalties are needed.
When he is released the next time, my whole life will change. It's a life safety plan.
Today we'll hear Allison's story. Also on the program, joining us from the Statehouse Law Library, Democratic Representative Marty Anderson, Republican Senator Charles Schneider, Stacey Hesse of a Waterloo Domestic Abuse Response Team, and Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell. First, a look at this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Domestic violence is in our spotlight this hour, and changes that seem to be afoot in our legislature and with our governor. We'll talk with a number of people this hour. First of all, we want to tell you that this morning, Governor Branstad announced a bill to toughen penalties for repeat domestic violence offenders. In just a moment, we'll talk with Iowa Public Radio's correspondent Joyce Russell, who was at the press conference with the governor this morning, with details on that. A couple of lawmakers coming up as well. But first, we want to talk with Tiffany Allison. Tiffany Allison was on our program last fall. She is a domestic violence survivor and now an advocate for domestic violence prevention and is working to change some laws in Iowa. Tiffany Allison joins us from the Law Library at the State House. Hello, Tiffany.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Thank you for coming on the program again. We had you to talk about domestic violence just a few months ago. In just a moment, I want to have you tell us about your legislative work. But let's have you remind us of your circumstances surrounding your case with domestic violence, an experience that started in 2009 when you started dating a man named Scotty.
Sure. In 2009, I became a victim of violent crime through domestic violence. My abuser took me against my will in my home and hit me with his hands, knees, and feet. He beat me with a wrought iron cross until it broke into two pieces, knocked me unconscious twice. The first time through knocking my head against a hardwood stair, the second time through strangulation. He bit me about my body during the assault and urinated on me. And through the court process, I found out that I was his fifth victim. And he was sentenced to 2.5 years for felony domestic assault. He served 10 months due to the good time rule in Iowa and was on parole for 2 months thereafter. And within 12 months of his release, he reoffended with another woman and permanently disfigured her face through biting her.
Mm-hmm. And so what you want to change as far as Iowa law is what?
I want to basically hold these offenders accountable by gaining truth in sentencing so that they will serve 85% of their sentence. I also want to make sure that there are community restraints when they are being paroled by putting in a mandatory 1-year parole period, beginning at a residential facility and then working out of that at the discretion of the Department of Corrections. And also, gaining some justice and security for the victims, safety for the community, and deterrence for the offender so that they, they'll be very aware if they commit another crime that is violent that they will be spending a lot more time in prison than they would be on the prior two offenses.
You're working with Senator Matt McCoy to introduce this bill. It's called Senate File 23, is that right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. The Violent Habitual Offender Bill.
Okay. The Violent Habitual Offender Bill. And you've been at this how long?
This is my second year.
Your second year. So you've been through a few sessions of the legislature beforehand, and up to this point, you have not succeeded, but it looks like things are changing?
I'm hopeful that it will pass this year. My bill includes various violent crimes. It's not just domestic violence, but because my story has been domestic violence and because we've had a lot of celebrity occurrences of domestic violence in the media. It has put this bill in the spotlight and gained support from the community a greater amount than we had last year. People are reaching out and contacting their representatives, and that's what we need in order to get this bill passed.
Mm-hmm. Where is the offender who hurt you so badly now?
Currently, he is in a minimum security facility in Rockwell City, Iowa, North Central Correctional Facility.
Okay. Tiffany Allison, domestic violence survivor. We want to reach out to you, River to River listeners. If you've been a victim of domestic violence, do you think our laws need to be changed? You've heard how Tiffany would like them to be changed. Do you think our laws need to be changed regarding repeat offenders in domestic violence cases? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Perhaps the social media avenue is better. If you'd like to remain anonymous, we certainly can respect that in this case. Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell is with us, State House correspondent, also at the Lau Library at the State House in Des Moines. Hello, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
How are you today?
Great.
Let's talk about this press conference you were at this morning, the governor addressing the issue. We have a cut from the governor as well. What can you tell us about it beforehand? We hear the governor.
Well, maybe just a brief summary of what the governor wants to do. There's going to be, if his bill becomes law, more of an emphasis on risk assessment, and that is a trend around the country. If you focus more on the ones who are most likely to reoffend, it can be a more effective approach. And it would apply to people who violate a no-contract order, or if they're convicted of assault, or if they're out on bail, and the court must consider that risk assessment in making any decisions about release. Another big part of this is increased use or use of GPS monitoring for offenders who are considered high risk. And this includes not just domestic assault, but also harassment of a domestic partner and stalking of a domestic partner. And then in addition to that, increased sentences for third offense domestic assault.
Let's listen to what the governor had to say at the press conference you were at with him, Joyce Russell. He announced this bill to toughen penalties for repeat domestic violence offenders. Here's something, a little bit of what he had to say.
The bill we are proposing ensures that repeat offenders are treated as a more serious threat to both the victims and the public. Our domestic abuse bill has several components that work to identify those abusers that pose a significant risk and focuses on ways to stop their future abusive behavior.
Governor Terry Branstad this morning announcing a bill to toughen penalties for repeat domestic violence offenders. Joyce Russell, there was also someone else speaking there, a member of the Iowa National Guard, the mother of a member of the Iowa National Guard who was killed. Tell us about that.
Sheila Lynch is another activist on this issue. Her daughter was killed by an abusive partner. She was in the Iowa Air National Guard. And we asked Governor Branstad today how this issue came to his attention. I mean, this has been a problem for a long time, mm-hmm. and he pointed to Sheila Lynch. He would probably point to Tiffany as well. It's because of the activism and the urging of people who've been personally affected.
Let's listen to what Sheila had to say this morning. She talked about what happened this morning with the reporters, with the governor there, emphasized how much GPS tracking would have helped her daughter.
We did not realize that he was stalking her. He was using different cars. So we were not able to track him. He stalked her, followed her, and I think everybody knows the rest of it, but he kidnapped her outside of a Target parking lot, in the parking lot, forced her into a car with his gun, took her back to the apartment that she fled from in fear of her life, brutally assaulted her, and then killed her with a deer rifle. If this legislation had been in effect, first of all, she would have known that he was within the distance he was not supposed to be, that he was violating that protective order. She would not have left that Target store. She would have stayed with Public, where she would have been safe. And the police would have known that he was also violating that protective order, and he could have been arrested, and that could have been the end of that part.
The mother of an Iowa National Guard member who was killed in 2009, testifying today. These sorts of painful stories, Joyce Russell, really seem to change things?
Well,
change minds, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I think they've reached the governor, and so he has made this a top priority. I will say that Sheila Lynch and her husband, it's been several years since this incident, and they have been up at the State House a number of times. The first time I talked to them, they were quite raw, really unable to talk mm-hmm. about the terrible tragedy in their family. As time has gone by, Sheila did an amazing job of telling her story this morning.
Mm-hmm. Tiffany Allison, you're listening to that, and you're certainly acquainted with this story here. But we have news this morning of the governor announcing these steps that he'd like to take. What's your reaction?
I am enthusiastic that he is taking notice of this problem. And I think that the passage of any bill making it tougher for these offenders is a step in the right direction, and it's better than what we have now. I have to speak truthfully and tell you that what we have now is not giving justice to our victims, and it's not protecting us either. So I think that the governor's bill addresses some key points where victims are very volatile in the court process.
Mm-hmm. And this focus on risk assessment, that must be also to your liking?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Joyce Russell with us, Tiffany Allison with us. We'd like to have you join our conversation talking about domestic violence. If you've been a victim of domestic violence, perhaps you'd like to share your story and your thoughts about the laws that are being discussed, law changes, perhaps this session that are being advocated for. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to give your reaction, your views. Also joining Joyce and Tiffany at the Law Library at the State House, we have two lawmakers. Representative Marty Anderson is with us, and she is the representative for House District 36. Representative Anderson, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. You're a Des Moines native, just so people know a little bit more about you. You had 38 years as a career as a social worker. You live in Beaverdale with your husband, and you spent 22 years and were the founding director of the Iowa Attorney General's Crime Victim Assistance Division, according to my notes here. Also with you, we have State Senator Charles Schneider of District 22, a Republican, ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Schneider, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Let's have you. I understand, Senator Schneider, you know a little bit more about the governor's bill. Dig into it a little bit more before doing that. So tell us, what is there a sea change on this issue? We've had people advocating for this for a few sessions, and now the governor is coming out for it.
Well, to your first question, I can't really speak to whether or not there's a sea change. I've served in the legislature now for 2 years. I'm going into my third session. This is the first time I recall this issue being discussed. But I will say that I think that this is an issue that people need to spend some time with and gain an understanding of. I think the normal layperson on the street, when they hear of a domestic violence case, they think, well, why doesn't the usually the woman, why doesn't the woman just leave the relationship? And that's just not the way these situations work. And I personally have learned a lot about this issue from my wife, Lisa, who was a counselor in a domestic violence shelter in both Omaha and Iowa City, and who also was a batterer's education program instructor in Iowa City. And one of the things I've learned is that there are a lot of reasons why someone wouldn't leave a relationship like that. And also, this is an issue that can affect anyone from any socioeconomic part of our society. And typically what we see is an escalation of behavior, and the escalation gets worse and worse and ultimately can lead to a horrible situation like what Tiffany experienced, or even worse.
Mm-hmm. Joyce, I want to give you a chance in a moment, because I know you want to talk with the lawmakers as well, have some questions as our State House correspondent. But Marty Anderson, Representative Anderson, you've spent time as a social worker for decades, number of years. What's your experience when it comes to domestic violence crime? Senator Schneider just said that his eyes were didn't say this in these words, open, but it sounded like it. There are a lot of misconceptions we have about domestic violence. One is what the senator just pointed out, that the one who's being abused can just get up and leave.
Yeah, I've actually been working on the crime of domestic violence since about 1973. And I've watched the sea change, although it's been a really slow sea change. In the beginning, people thought this was a family matter, and they didn't want to get involved, didn't want to interfere with the family. I think we've seen a change in that understanding, that that it's a crime for somebody to hurt the people that they have pledged to love. I've always thought that it was a worse crime to hurt somebody that you've pledged to love than it was to hurt somebody else, although I don't like either crimes. I've always thought that if you've pledged to love somebody and you break that pledge by injuring them, then I think that's a very serious issue. And I am thrilled or heartened to see that this is starting to kind of become the way we look at it. And as the senator said, there are lots of reasons why somebody doesn't leave an abusive relationship. Two of them are reasons that I saw quite frequently. The first one is that the victim or the person who's being abused loves the person that is abusing them. And they are sure that it was their fault and that this isn't the person that they loved and they can fix it. The second kind of thing that I've seen over the years is that especially women don't leave because they're going to get killed if they leave. They've been told that. They know that their partner has the capacity to do that. And they read about domestic violence murders all the time. We have in Iowa somewhere between 12 and 16 murders of women each year by their intimate partner, their spouse or their dating partner or their somebody they have a child with. It is so serious that I am very happy that the time has come that we're taking more steps to keep that victim safer.
Representative Marty Anderson with us, one of two lawmakers. We also have State Senator Charles Schneider with us in Des Moines. As we talk about domestic violence, also Joyce Russell, Tiffany Allison with us. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Representative Anderson, what do you think about the governor's bill, about his approach?
Well, there are things in the governor's bill that are actually very, very good. The electronic monitoring, the risk assessment, the increased penalties are excellent efforts to convey to people that this is a serious crime that has to be taken seriously. I do remember when Teresa Ann Lynch was murdered, and everybody thought she could protect herself because she was from the National Guard. There was a bill that would arm women in the legislature. There was a bill to arm domestic abuse victims so that they could protect themselves. But in Teresa Ann's case, she was taken entirely by surprise and was not did not have the opportunity to protect herself. So I'm glad to see these measures.
Well, how do you feel that this bill maybe falls short, or do you see any problems with it?
I think for what this bill does, it does not fall short. I think Tiffany has a bill that's a little broader related to all victims of violent crime. But as far as this bill goes, it's very well researched, and I'd have to do a little bit more research myself to look into what I like and don't like about it since it just came out this morning. Mm-hmm. One of the bills that I have filed is... it makes dating violence a domestic assault instance. Dating violence is defined as domestic assault for the purposes of a no-contact order and some of the other rights that crime victims, that domestic violence survivors have, but it is not part of the assault section of the law. I also have a bill that would create a program in the Secretary of State's office for called Safe at Home for domestic abuse, sexual assault, basically victims of any crime to file a special request with the Secretary of State and use that office as their address in voting so that the abuser can't track the person down through the voting registry.
Talking about domestic violence on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, Representative Marty Anderson, State Senator Charles Schneider with us in Des Moines with Joyce Russell, also Tiffany Allison, a domestic violence survivor and now advocate for domestic violence prevention. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org, especially if you've been a victim of domestic violence. Do you think our laws need to be changed along the lines that you're hearing about this hour regarding repeat offenders in domestic violence cases? 1-866-780-9100. Coming up on a break, but before we do, let's go to Lisa listening in Des Moines. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for calling in.
Hi.
Do you have a story to tell? Or
about? I applaud the bill trying to go through. I have fled from my husband 3 years ago. I was a repeating woman going back because of the children. It's my fault. I feel guilty over 20 years, but the last 3 years I have not seen my two sons. I cannot go back to California. The threats of are too fatal. And I'm stuck with the situation of being in Iowa. I was born and raised here, and I had really hoped that I would have a legal foot for safety mm-hmm. here in my home state, but I don't. I am I'm stuck with an interstate problem. And the attorneys that I've talked to, of course, I don't have any money either. Do not want to touch the case because it's in California. I understand that they don't have the credentials or so forth, but what do you do with a situation like mine when I have lost the family, my sons, monetarily, economically abused, financially abused, everything? I have been followed on GPS in the car, my cell phone, computer, cyber stalked. I'm a sitting duck, and I am reaching out right now.
Lisa, thank you for your story. It's a very painful story. Thank you for sharing it with us today on River to River. We are coming up on a break. I want to get a quick reaction to see if Marty Anderson, with your experience here, do you have any quick advice for Lisa, who's called in with a very painful story?
I'm not sure what Lisa's trying to get done legally, but she can apply for a protection order in Iowa if she's from out of state. I'm not sure what the divorce laws would be like, but I would recommend that she call the Polk County Family Violence Center, which is at Children and Families of Iowa, and get advice from the experts.
Okay, Lisa in Des Moines, thank you. Thank you for that advice. We have Representative Marty Anderson with us, State Senator Charles Schneider, Tiffany Allison, a domestic violence survivor herself, and our own Joyce Russell. We'll be back talking more about domestic violence. We'll hope you'll join us, 1-866-780-9100. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Tomorrow at this time, I'll be talking with Jenny Nordberg. She's an investigative reporter who wrote a book about girls disguised as boys in Afghanistan. She'll be in Iowa later this week. Also tomorrow on this program, the political and cultural columnist for Salon magazine, Thomas Frank, will be with us. I hope you'll tune in tomorrow for the program. Today, domestic violence. We're talking with lawmakers, Representative Marty Anderson and State Senator Charles Schneider, about possible changes in our domestic violence law here. Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell at the State House with them, as well as Tiffany Allison, a domestic violence survivor herself, has been advocating for some time for stricter, harsher penalties for repeat domestic violence offenders. Perhaps you'd like to join our conversation. Perhaps you've been a victim of domestic violence. Do you think our laws need to be changed regarding repeat offenders in domestic violence cases? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Joyce Russell was at a news conference this morning held by the governor to address this issue and to announce a bill. Remind us, Joyce, for those who've just joined us, what message did the governor have? What does he propose here?
Well, as you mentioned, increased mandatory minimums for third offense domestic assault. And that includes stalking and harassment as well. And then in addition to that, risk assessment for offenders who violate contact orders or are convicted of assault or who are out on bail. And then use of GPS tracking for those at high risk of reoffending.
Tiffany Allison, is what you're suggesting broader than what the governor has outlined this morning? And I realize you haven't had time to dig deeply into what the governor is suggesting, but what is your reaction there? Is it?
Yes, my bill is broader than what the governor is proposing. His bill is specifically aimed at domestic violence, harassment, and stalking. And the bill that I'm proposing, the Violent Habitual Offender Bill, addresses domestic abuse, assault, sexual assault, kidnapping, homicide, and burglary. Basically, if you commit a violent crime and harm a person during the commission of it, you're going to qualify for the violent habitual offender.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be a repeat of domestic assault. It can be a different violent crime.
Yes.
That gets you a check mark in this case.
In crafting this bill, through my own personal experience and in speaking with other victims of domestic violence, a lot of times, even though what is truly happening is domestic violence, those offenders don't fit neatly into that domestic abuse charge. Specifically with my offender, when he offended with the woman after me and permanently disfigured her face, truly it was domestic violence. But there's rules and limitations in the criminal code of what can be considered domestic violence. Dating violence is not included in that currently. So he was charged with second-degree burglary because he broke into an occupied structure to get to her, and then willful injury for the biting.
You said dating violence is not included?
No, it is not currently. There is a bill that I believe Marty is hosting that would make dating violence part of the criminal code. Last year, it was lobbied for very hard and unfortunately did not pass. And I'm hopeful with that bill also that that it will pass and make dating violence part of the code for domestic violence.
Share your thoughts on that. Representative Anderson, dating violence, why it's not included in what's presently at hand.
Dating violence is included in the definition of domestic violence in Iowa Code Section 236, or Chapter 236, which is kind of the civil end of the courts dealing with domestic violence. It is not part of Section 708, which is the criminal part of the 708-2A. They define domestic abuse for an assault charge as people who live together, people who are married, people who have a child in common, people who have been together in the last 2 years, lived together in the last 2 years, but they do not include the fifth element, which is dating violence, mm-hmm. Assault law.
Joyce Russell, jump in here. You had a question, I think.
I just wondered how far. It seems like years ago, like way back, there were bills that had to do with getting dating covered with these domestic violence laws. You would have been in the crime victim area at that time. So I guess you've been trying all this time to get this included?
Well, yeah, I am not only patient, but I am persistent. I have believed that a dating violence situation can be defined and should be part of the domestic abuse law. There are many, many, many young girls who are harmed by their intimate partner. And I just think that it's unconscionable that we don't include dating as part of our definition of domestic violence.
What's your reaction to that, State Senator Charles Schneider, the dating violence issue?
Oh, I agree. There can be what people would typically think of as domestic violence or domestic assault taking place within the context of a dating relationship. I think the distinction, as Representative Anderson was explaining it to me earlier, is that there's a definition in the civil part of the Iowa Code that does define domestic abuse as including, or actually it doesn't include, a dating relationship where people aren't cohabitating. I think the governor's, we all just got the bill this morning and I've just been looking through it, but there's some language in the governor's bill that makes it look as though it's trying to incorporate that kind of dating relationship into the overall picture of what's considered domestic abuse and what the minimum sentences would be for those types of crimes.
State Senator Charles Schneider with us, along with Representative Marty Anderson, talking about domestic violence, possible suggested changes in Iowa law. Joyce Russell with us as well. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'd like to introduce one last guest to the mix here. Joining us by phone is Stacy Hesse, investigator for the Waterloo Police Department, also a member of the Domestic Abuse Response Team there. Stacy Hesse, investigator, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Describe quickly, if you could, our hour is running out, but the makeup of your team and its goal to start out with.
Our team is made up of myself, an investigator with the police department, a prosecutor from the Blackhawk County Attorney's Office, a domestic violence advocate, and a court advocate that works with any of the victims or the families as needed through the court process. We work together to make sure that victims are safe, that they have all of their questions answered, that this is as positive a process as they can have throughout this, and that offenders are held accountable for the crimes they committed.
Mm-hmm. Do you specifically, your team, go out on domestic violence calls?
We do not go out on the calls. The patrol officers handle the calls, and then we handle everything after the fact to make sure that these are prosecuted successfully.
Investigator Hesse, you've been listening to what's been talked about this hour up to this point. What do you feel? What sorts of things have jumped out at you in the field as being most helpful to victims and to prevent further domestic violence as much as we can with the law?
Well, first of all, I'd like to address Tiffany. Thank you for everything that you're doing to raise awareness for domestic violence. You are a positive role model to all survivors. Education is so important, and you're definitely a voice to be heard.
You're welcome. I just hope that I can give strength to someone that needs help.
I'm glad you're out there doing that. The things that I've heard today are really positive. This new bill that's being introduced, the risk assessment is really encouraging. This gives more information to not only the judges, but the people from the Department of Corrections for either pretrial supervision or supervision post-release. As the offenders are on probation, this gives them more information that they need, especially from the victims. The stalking laws, if I can address that.
Please.
That was something that was brought up a couple of times. And I know in our area, we really have a problem prosecuting these stalking laws because of the way that the code is written. Because it says the person has to have a reasonable fear of bodily injury or death. We often see people violating no contact orders by leaving a note on a car or knocking on a door or doing something that doesn't necessarily cause fear of bodily injury or death, but it's still very, very frightening for these victims because they know what contact from the offenders means. it's really hard for us to articulate that to get it successfully prosecuted. Any feedback from Senator Schneider or Representative Anderson on that?
Well, there is a provision in the governor's bill that does increase the mandatory minimum for stalking in the first degree where a protective order has been issued and the person is in a domestic relationship. So, again, I still need to read through the bill more closely, but it does appear as though they're trying to get at that issue by saying, look, even if you, just by virtue of violating the protective order, you've also triggered this mandatory minimum.
And my comment would be that the, like domestic abuse dating issues, domestic abuse stalking is sometimes difficult to detail with evidence. And so I'm heartened again that we are working at it and working to find a way to do it. Our stalking bill had a great amount of resistance back in the early 90s when it was passed. And if we can improve it based on the information we get from people who live with stalkers every day, then that's what we should do.
I would agree with that, too.
Let's talk about some consequences of these mandatory minimums serving longer parts of the rule. What about some of the consequences, such as prisons? Can State Senator Schneider, are prisons handle the extra people that would be there for longer periods of time? Is there room for them?
Well, I haven't done an in-depth dive into our prison population right now. It's all relative. It all depends on what happens with the granting of parole for different crimes. The legislature this year, at least in the Senate, we're taking a bipartisan look at sentencing for certain nonviolent drug-related offenses, and certain changes we make there may end up reducing the prison population. So it's all really hard to determine. The important thing, I think, is that we make sure that anyone who has this pattern of behavior and has been convicted of these crimes is held accountable for that, and that the victim of those crimes and the public at large is safe. And we ought to spend the resources and allocate the resources necessary in order to accomplish that objective.
Mm-hmm. Will the issue of prison overcrowding be part of the perhaps opposition to this bill, you anticipate?
It could be. I, again, believe that these are really serious crimes. They, more often than some other crimes, end in a death, a violent death of the person who's the victim, and sometimes their children or other relatives or people in their home. And I think that harming somebody that you have said you love or that you have asked to be a dating partner is a very, very serious crime, and we need to make sure we get that across.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about judges here. Senator Schneider here, are you at all concerned about taking power, discretion away from the judges for these individual cases, dictating what must be done in certain cases? Isn't that, after all, why we have judges, to look at individual cases and instead of very broad issues?
That is an issue that can come up, judicial discretion. At the same time, I think that Tiffany's story and countless other stories like hers really underscore the need to make sure that we do make sure that we have mandatory minimum sentences for certain types of offenses for people who have shown a certain pattern of behavior. And if ensuring that the public is protected and these people are punished means that we take away some judicial discretion, so be it.
Okay, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Illinois. Anna?
Yes?
Hello, Anna. We're running out of time, but please tell us, what would you like to chip in?
Well, I have a situation where my daughter has special needs. She's borderline IQ. Probably on the spectrum, but was never diagnosed. And she was with an abuser, and still is actually currently. He kidnapped her once, had her living out of her car and in a hotel. I could not get a hold of her. I had him checked into the hospital as a danger to himself and to other people with someone else who knew him, and we stated that. And he was actually diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia with violent tendencies. So you would not be able to domestically rehab him through some counseling. And he was court-ordered onto medicine. And, you know, they wanted me to see where he was, which I didn't know. But I did tell him he was with my daughter, and her address was at her place of work. The police told me they could not be bothered. This is Davenport, Iowa. Again, she got another restraining order after another domestic violence. I sent her to California. He broke the restraining order and was stalking her by phone. And they told me they could do nothing. So we looked into the Iowa code. My nephew is studying to be a lawyer in California. And indeed, they are held accountable if we say that we have actually heard him on the phone with her. They need to get his records. And they need to see his phone records, which they did. And the most that happened was more domestic violence counseling for someone with paranoid schizophrenia, court-ordered on medicine. And he was not able to lift the restraining order. She was not able to. Once he brought her back here, he sent her money. He told her to get the hell back here. He was going to kill her. And because of her special needs, she believed that. So she is now back here with her abuser again. And he is not only a danger to my daughter, but he's been known at work to break glass, to throw computers, because of his mental illness. So okay. It's just a danger to the community in general. And I have found that the police are very, very unwilling to do what they need to do and what they are actually required by some of the Iowa codes to do to make sure that these victims, even under the laws that currently exist, are actually given the maximum protection that actually even exists now.
Okay, Anna, thank you for sharing that from Illinois. Since she mentioned law enforcement there, Stacey Hesse, investigator for the Waterloo Police Department, is a member of the Domestic Abuse Response Team. What is your reaction to that story?
That is just a heartbreaking story. It's so frustrating for parents to watch their adult children go through these things. We've had numerous calls into the police department to check on adult children that are in violent relationships. And the Iowa code does state that if we do suspect a domestic assault, if there is an injury, we shall arrest. If there is not an injury, we may arrest. So sometimes it comes down to the point of trying to prove what happened. And she said there was people on the phone and witnesses and things like that. And, of course, I can't address a situation that we weren't involved with, but that's got to be so frustrating for the parents. But I do encourage, if you believe that a family member is involved in a domestic violence situation, feel free to call law enforcement. We will be absolutely glad to go out and check the welfare of the people involved and make sure that everybody is safe, do everything that we can either to make an arrest or refer them to domestic violence services in our area in case they don't want to deal with the police at the time.
Investigator Stacey Hesse with us of the Waterloo Police Department. Joyce Russell, our correspondent there at the State House with our other guests there. We're running out of time here. I want to get back to you to see what's on your mind as we finish up this hour. Perhaps a question for our guests as well.
Well, the mandatory arrest law has been in place for quite a long time. In other words, a police officer goes, there's a call, police officer goes, it appears that there was domestic assault, then the arrest is supposed to be mandatory. And I'm just curious, Representative Anderson, from what you know, how well is that being enforced? How well are police departments doing that?
I would say that Iowa police departments are very good with that. The idea that you would go and do a mandatory arrest was a fairly new idea in 1992 or 1991. I can't remember which of those years that was passed. But, police, like everyone else, take a while to learn differently. In the 70s, this was considered a family issue and you didn't involve yourself in it. Well, police are have come a long way since then, and most Iowa police do a great job, and they're specially trained at the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy on issues of domestic violence. And I am hoping that your caller will be persistent in contacting those police.
Running out of time, I want to jump in here, Joyce, and put a question in closing to State Senator Charles Schneider. We have an anonymous email from an Iowan who writes, while many agree on tougher penalties for domestic violence and other crimes, there's been an analysis of the budget impact. Has there been an analysis of the budget impact and the additional costs of incarceration as well as GPS monitoring? This does need to be considered. I'm sorry, I only have 30 seconds for you, Senator Snyder.
To my knowledge, there has not been an economic analysis done yet or financial cost analysis. I will say, however, that the governor's bill does provide that a judge can require that the defendant pay for the cost of the GPS tracking, and I think that is very important.
Okay. State Senator Charles Schneider with us of District 22, ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Representative Marty Anderson, House District 36, also Tiffany Allison, a guest in our studio there at the Law Library, domestic violence survivor and now advocate, Joyce Russell of Iowa Public Radio. It's been a show with lots of moving parts, a very complicated issue. Stacey Hesse, thank you from the Waterloo Police Department for joining us as well. Thank you all. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.